Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Nutcracker Syndrome podcast. I am in the middle of ketamine therapy, and I wanted to do a follow-up to the second session that I posted a couple days ago. I'm recording this episode a day before I go in for my third ketamine session, and I really want to use this series to just document, maybe even selfishly, for me to be able to go back and kind of see from start to finish a themes that come out. But what was interesting is I recorded the last session and I felt really good. And I talked about that in the session about how like I felt like in the second session I was able to really explore more, get a lot out of the session itself. I felt like it didn't carry over with me to when I got home and things like that. And what was funny is I get home and I just got done talking to you about all that in the episode. And I get home and had this major integration. And it was very uncomfortable. It was not fun. But I really felt I went immediately to my notes section on my phone and wrote it all down because I was like, I want to capture this on the podcast. I want to capture this in the ketamine-assisted therapy series to. Again, both selfishly for me, also to share my lived experience with you all, especially those that are interested in doing ketamine-assisted therapy, that maybe the domino that tipped you into doing ketamine-assisted therapy is Nutcracker syndrome. I mean, it was for me. I have needed to do deep psychedelic work anyways, just because of my own childhood trauma, my ACEs score, which is abusive childhood experiences scale is through the roof. I mean, and something in speaking to other Nutcracker individuals is that all of us have childhood trauma, at least those that I've talked to. That could just be that I attract those people. Who knows? But I'm sure down the line, if there was a research study done on those with Nutcracker syndrome and using the ACEs score, I would not be surprised if there was a strong effect size, significant correlation between a person having a high childhood adverse experiences and vascular compressions happening. So again, that's an assumption. Research would need to be done for us to actually say that there's a relationship between them. I would go as far as to make a hypothesis out of it instead of a research question. Now, with that being said, recorded the last episode, I uploaded it. I felt it's just funny. This ketamine experience is like, there's just feels like you walk around a corner and bam, that's something there. And so I got done recording this episode, I upload it, and then the next day, or I think it was later that night, I kind of forget. Time and space are a little wonky for me. I get home, and this is also a couple days before my birthday weekend. So 2 days ago, as of the recording of this session, it was my birthday. January 25th is my birthday. I had a bunch of friends come into town for I rented an Airbnb out in Idaho Springs. A bunch of friends that came up from Salida, Colorado, to hang out with me. We had a really good time. My birthday is very charged, so I kind of knew it probably wasn't. On one hand, not a great idea to start ketamine-assisted therapy around my birthday because I have a lot of trauma and emotions that are attached to my birthday. Just a lot. I'm realizing through this ketamine-assisted therapy, like, I don't actually wish I was born. I don't really like this experience on Earth. I mean, even when I was younger, prior to vascular compressions, I was always battling with depression and anxiety. I've just recently got medicated this last year when I was 35, because I do come from a family. I was born very religious. It wasn't necessarily explicitly stated, but it was very much kind of insinuated that if you're depressed and anxious, you just need to pray more, that type of shit. So, a lot of my lived experience as a kid was. There was a lot of spiritual bypassing of my lived experience, and probably a lot of what contributes to my autoimmune disease now. As there is research that's demonstrating that those that have autoimmune, it's their way of attacking themselves because they have been externally attacked. Their reality has not been validated. So I get home, it's before my birthday. I have a lot of feelings around my birthday. I have a lot of trauma around my birthday. It's just, I get excited about it. I love celebrating it. But leading up to my birthday is a very, it's emotional for me. And at the same time, think about that. Just at a baseline, it's emotional for me. And now I'm throwing ketamine-assisted therapy at it. So it's been a bit, the last 2 weeks have been stressful. So after the last recording, I wanted to do like a session 2.2 for you all just to understand that this is a fluid process. I have my third session tomorrow. We'll see how this goes. I've had to talk with Kyle multiple times about like, yo, just be gentle with me. Like very deep, deep, scared, sad parts are coming out that I have. There's no way that I can anticipate what's going to come out. Kyle has experience with psychedelics, so he does understand. So I have just let him know, and then I'll get into the details here. Hey, if I start getting kind of spicy, can you just, instead of like going down the spicy road with me, just know that that's my scared 12, 13, 6-year-old, 5-year-old self. Just put your hand on my shoulder and just give me a hug, right? So after the recording of the last episode, so session two, had some pretty intense integration come through for me. So what I'm now in the moment, I didn't realize this. Now, one thing I am good at because I've been doing a lot of fucking therapy for a decade plus is I can like within an hour kind of be like, oh, that wasn't great. Let me follow up and like apologize. So in the moment, I don't realize this is my scared child self rearing its nasty head, right? Like it's so I'm starting to get a little spicy with Kyle. Things are getting kind of heated, and I'm just like I'm unhinged. I'm not even gonna say a smidge unhinged. I am unhinged. We're both working a lot. He does intense physical labor as an arborist, so yeah, he's tired. I'm tired. I'm getting spicy. He's getting spicy back. Like not really great. We didn't look good as a unit that day, and such are couples. But like I said, I'm pretty good at being able to acknowledge like when we both kind of, went our separate ways, we both realized like, okay, this is getting, heated. He goes upstairs, I stay downstairs. Probably, I think it was probably 20 minutes. I went upstairs and I was like, hey, I want to apologize. Now that I'm settled just a smidge, I'm realizing like there's just a lot going on right now. I'm stressed. I was able to like communicate. I'm stressed about my birthday coming up. These other things are coming up for me. Like I'm really scared. I was crying a lot. And I was like, I just really, what I need you to do is just show up for me. Honestly, just give me a hug. I need the hug that I always needed in every other situation in my life. So while like right in the moment, it wasn't great, like Kyle and I are very, we are independently pretty stubborn people. And so I wasn't able, like, in the moment when things were getting spicy, to really see it. 20 minutes later, once we kind of went to our separate spaces, I was like, okay, I need to chill the fuck out. So I go and I tell Kyle, I'm like, listen, that version of me that you just saw is I'm scared. I'm really scared. It's all of the fear and the scared little girl that nobody ever came into my room and asked, how are you doing? Nobody ever asked me that. Nobody ever asked me when my brother was told he had 3 to 6 months to live when I was in the third grade and he was a sixth grader and he was my best friend. Nobody asked me how I was doing. I don't remember it at least. I just remember asking my mom later in life, gosh, a couple years ago, like, what was I like as a kid? Like, can you replay to me what it was like for me? When you told me about him having 36 months to live, and actually my family never told me. I found out from a classmate in the third grade. So I felt the depth of betrayal there, that not even my own family came to me and said, hey, we're going to navigate this together. So all of those times that I was scared when my dad had to go be a bone marrow donor for his brother that had leukemia, for, I mean, the list goes on, all the times I needed somebody to hold me because I was scared, like of my brother dying, of my dad killing himself, of my mom ignoring my reality. Like the list goes on. Okay. So I go to Kyle and I'm like, listen, so much of my trauma is relational, and so much of everybody else's trauma is relational that we can obviously do, we don't necessarily need relationship to fix it per se, but sometimes it does take relationship, like those hugs that you needed. You need the hug from somebody. And so I finally, like once we were able to like identify what was going on, I was able to come and say, hey, like this isn't, let me not forget who you are to me, and let, like the same to him, you not forget who I am to you. Let's take a second to just take a macro approach and like, listen, I love you, right? Vice versa, the whole nine yards. So I'm like, Kyle, I can't express it. I just need a hug right now, truly. And he came and gave me a hug, and I booger snotted hugged him. And just like, there were multiple, like, there were kind of some times where we'd pull back and, he'd give me some kisses on the forehead, and then he'd pull me back in and I'd cry even harder. And he just held me as I sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. And I was like, really, really embodying that, those, all of those versions of myself that were scared that needed to be held when I was younger. I mean, thousands of times that I needed to be held, and I needed to be allowed the space to sob and allow the space. But because I was never held, and because I was never allowed the space to sob and have somebody else comfort me and say, it's going to be okay. Specifically, we're going to get through this together. Because what's communicated is you got to figure it out on your own. You got to be self-sufficient. Nobody's going to come in your room and ask you how you're doing and ask you if you need help, because they don't have the emotional capacity to navigate it themselves, let alone help their child navigate it. There's also a shit ton of research that demonstrates that siblings of siblings, so the sibling of a child that gets diagnosed with, like, they're going to die soon with cancer or with whatever, with chronic illness, that they, I believe the research shows it's like a 30 to 40% increase in them getting CPTSD, which I was diagnosed with at 27 and dealt with my entire life, but just didn't get a formal diagnosis until I was 27 because I didn't start therapy till I was 27. And when I was a kid, my mom did put me in therapy. She didn't really like the things the therapist was validating from my lived experience. So I was taken out. I was never allowed to go back. But what was interesting and what I really wanted to capture in this episode is this. Is I'm sobbing, Kyle's holding me. I am just, I mean, I've sobbed like this before. I've had experiences like this before. But the difference was this. Prior to ketamine-assisted therapy, I would sob, 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 and having a very similar experience that I had with Kyle. And I would feel, it almost felt like after that, I just felt super heavy for a couple days. Like, but I shit you not, I did the same thing. I sob, I sob, I sob. I went upstairs. I remember I had like a sweatshirt situation on. I was getting kind of hot. You know how it is when you get emotional? You get sweaty. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna go put the t-shirt on. I go upstairs, I change my t-shirt, I come downstairs, and I literally looked at Kyle. I could feel the release. I had never actually felt the release before. I felt like I had sobbed and sobbed and sobbed, but for whatever reason, it just felt like I had actually sobbed and it was a productive sob. And I came downstairs 2 seconds later and I looked at Kyle and I said, yeah, that was literally, I told you that was all I needed. I feel great. And I just like, we went about the rest of the night. I don't know for him, it could have still felt, but I felt like, okay, do you want to watch RuPaul's Drag Race? Like, it was like a night and day, almost like felt psychotic to me, because my normal is sobbing, sobbing, sobbing about something, but then I would never fully release it. And I didn't know what the mechanism was. Like, don't get me wrong, all these years I wanted to release it. My God, I've been wanting to release this shit. Holy shit. But it was almost as if there was a part of me, and I can't even put words to it. I don't even know how to describe it. There was like a part of me that was holding on to it. And to some extent, I feel like I could maybe conceptualize this as like it was the victim part of me. Like, I've had therapists in the past, one in particular that was like, listen, I can keep taking your money, but like, if you want to keep sitting in this victim mindset of woe is me, this is what they did to me, blah blah blah, I can keep taking your money, but we're not going to get anywhere until you actually decide to put the victim mindset down. And I remember being so fucking frustrated because I'm like, I do want to put the victim mindset down. I don't want to hold this, but my body was struck. And I don't even, to be honest with you, I don't even know if calling it the victim mindset is actually the correct. Like, I don't even know if that puts the finger on it. I don't know if it fully captures what I wasn't releasing. But this ketamine-assisted therapy just feels like it really, like, now when I do lean into some heavy emotion and I cry it out, I even remember when Kyle was holding me. I don't even know how long it was. There was a distinct moment where I was like, oh, okay, we're done. We just processed it. It was fucking insane. I was like, oh, okay. Like, I didn't feel like I cried about it, but still was holding on to it. I don't know. And I wanted to capture this in a kind of a session 2.2, because I have felt that shift. I have felt myself not hold on to stuff as much anymore. And what's also something I definitely want to say here is a lot of people think, growing up, my family was always like, well, go to therapy. Like, I think once you can forgive us, it'll make more sense and stuff like that. And I'm like, actually, it's been the opposite. The deeper into therapy I've gone, and the more that I have actually come to find who I am, and I have restored parts of myself that didn't feel safe around my family, that I had to lock away in a dungeon to say, hey, I'll come retrieve you in a couple decades when we're not here anymore, that shit. It's like the opposite. It's like the more that I actually come to retrieve myself from those dungeons, the more I'm like, it, like, I have forgiven my family. That's actually happened a long time ago, even when they would tell me I haven't. I mean, I explicitly would have family that would be like, you're just so angry. And I'm like, yeah, to be honest with you, I get angrier as I get deeper into health therapy, and it's a righteous anger. It's not even like a, like, it's a relieving anger, to be quite honest with you. It feels like, yeah, I'm angry, and it's an anger that will never go away, but not in a bad way. It's not destructive. It's a part of me that I have retrieved from the trenches that's letting me know, yeah, there's some people that you don't feel safe around in this world, and there's a reason why. And unfortunately, even if they are your biological family, it doesn't mean you have to engage with them. And so, like, the I wanted to share that for anybody that resonates of, I am already seeing the benefits of this ketamine therapy, and it's insane. It's ins I can't even, for my body to somatically actually experience the letting go, I'm like, oh, I was never letting go to begin with. I don't even know what part of me necessarily was holding on to it, but that's not what matters. With ketamine therapy. Ketamine therapy to me is like, you go in and you try not to control the narrative. You just let it happen, and all these little nuggets start coming up. And I still, like, there is that part of me that is like, oh, well, let's make sense of this. And it's like, how about we actually just sit in the peace that comes with this letting go and tap that in, right? Like, really sit and let that myelinate your neural pathways, this peace that you feel in letting go, to increase your body's likelihood of allowing other things to go in the future. And I am feeling a lightness about it. It is, I mean, again, this first time I've ever felt like I've leaned into grief, which it isn't unlike me to do. Anyways, I've leaned into deep, deep grief for a very long time. So I don't I, it's not a matter of like, oh, I'm just leaning in for the first time. It's a, I've been leaning in this whole time. Nothing about how I've been leaning in really changes. It's just that there feels like a ketamine, maybe. I don't want to overcredit ketamine, but ketamine allowed my body to grease some wheel that's gone rusty. To say, oh, yeah, you need to start working, which means you need to start letting go. Yeah, I don't. And what's also another interesting thing, and maybe those that are in relationship, I mean, while Kyle grinds my mother loving gears sometimes, I mean, and a lot of it is just when you live with a person, we're also living in a 500 square foot spot. One thing this process has also really helped me, I have always felt very unsafe in relationships. And some of that is that I'm constantly scanning for threats, and my brain doesn't allow me to see safety, because I was raised in a very catastrophic and abusive environment. And one of the things that was really profound with Kyle and within the last couple of weeks is that my body clearly feels safe around him, because I have been able to release so many things with him, whether it's him holding me and helping me release it, or we're in the same room and I'm like deep in my integration stuff and he's he's just present on his phone because we don't have many places to go. And my body clearly feels safe enough with him in the room to be able to do that work. And that's also been super insightful for me because I've never, in past relationships, I do feel like that person was safe for me, but my brain never let go of past programming of relational unsafety to not view that person through the lens of my past traumatic relationships. So I was counter-transferring, imposing the sins of other people onto that person to where my body wasn't even allowing them to be a safe place for me. And to some degree, I've done that with Kyle in the past 2 years. And I'm aware of that and I've spoken about that with him. But I'm like really seeing it and feeling it now and feeling like I'm leaning into resting into that. Like, so there's a lot continuing to be processed still. Again, I have my third session tomorrow. We'll see if they up me to 10 milligram, another 10 milligrams to 65. One other thing I do want to say, this past weekend, I did ask them ahead of time. I said, hey, I have my birthday coming up. We're definitely gonna have some psychedelics there. You know, I want to honor this space in ketamine therapy, so I don't want to do anything that would hurt it. They did let me know, as I've reiterated before, that alcohol is essentially an eraser of all this shit. So they were like, you're more than welcome to have one glass of wine. Sure, that's not going to do and be detrimental to it. But if you're going to go and be an alcoholic over your birthday, that is going to be detrimental. I'm not a big drinker. Maybe one to two a month. I mean, even that, I used to be fully sober from alcohol, as a preemptive way to see, is this the last ditch effort? Are my health issues related to alcohol? Clearly it wasn't. But they were like, yeah, you can microdose some shrooms, you can microdose whatever, just don't overdo it. And I was like, that's not even my personality anyways. I'm the mom of the group usually, so even if I do drugs, I don't do them. I don't do hero doses. But what was interesting is on my birthday, we made a shroom cake. You know, again, I don't do shrooms very often. So I'm like, okay, I'll take two microdose capsules. I'll probably be good. And it became very clear that doing ketamine, I was like, I wasn't feeling anything. I did, gosh, what did we have? Yeah, I did four total capsules, which I should have absolutely felt. And I didn't. And some of it is that I think my tolerance has been raised because I've been doing ketamine therapy. So, for those of you that are out there that are doing psychedelics that are maybe you don't do them on a regular basis, but you do have experience with them, that was something that was really a smidge of a bummer because all my friends were like, you know, having a nice little giggly time. And I felt like I was just over, like, I'm not really feeling anything. And I just decided, instead of trying to chase a high, instead of trying to chase matching my friends, I just stayed where I was at. I didn't want to get into some loop of trying to chase a high to enjoy my birthday. And then, like, the theme of yearning has been coming up for me in this ketamine therapy. So I was like, I don't want to try to yearn for something just to have this experience, when in reality, like, my body's just telling me that this is just what it is. So I stayed chill. All my friends were like giggling, doing their thing. I actually went to bed pretty early in comparison to what I was imagining I would. So that was surprising to me. I wanted to share that with you all. But I'm curious about these next sessions and how they're going to go. I am starting to see. I mean, we are my first, let me look back here. My first ketamine session was on Friday the 16th. So we are looking at a week and a half in. Okay. A little bit more than that. So, and I really am starting to feel the effects of it. And buckle up, baby. We got four more sessions. So I appreciate you being here, listening to this. I hope me sharing is insightful for you. And at the end of the day, I think this will be wonderful for me to go back and listen to it and see what themes come out. So, I encourage you to continue on, mindfully with your day, as well as continuing on into the next episode, if that's what makes sense for you. So thank you for being here.